Hey everybody, welcome to the Ghoulcast. This is Chris. I apologize for the long delay in doing another Ghoulcast because it's been a while. But the gang hasn't really gotten a chance to get together for a while. Unfortunately, life kind of intervened for me and made it really kind of not possible to do a podcast for a while. So we're going to try to remedy that and get back on schedule. So for today, for this podcast, basically, Paul, Glenn, and myself are going to be sharing stories or poems or whatever, kind of tell creepy tales for you, just so we can kind of get something in the books and kind of get back on schedule, as I say. So the three of us are recording separately. I'm going to do the intro, outro, since I'm doing this. If you'll sit right back and chill some bones, I will share a creepy little story for you. And then when I'm done, you'll hear from Glenn and then from Paul. And hopefully we'll give you a summer shiver to go with all the terror in the world. So this is a story I have written called Ball. And here we go. I had a dog. I loved that dog. It was a great big Great Dane. Grandma got it for us when my sister went off to college. There was a big gap between she and I, so Grams figured that a dog was what the family needed, what I needed. And it was always my dog. Captain was 4 when we got him, and I was 11 now. When I was 14 and Carrie was 21, Mom and Dad adopted one last kid. A baby. She was the daughter of a friend of the family, someone Mom had met in college. The woman had lost her husband in a car accident, and she was dying from leukemia, so Mom and Dad had a long talk together, then with my sister and me, and that was how Amelia came to live with us. She was too young to remember her mom, but my mom and dad made sure to get photos and letters from her and recordings of her so that when the time came, they would tell her all about her mother. That'd be years from now, though, because she was 3 when she came to live with us. Amelia moved into the house in late June, and we lost the dog in August. Things really started, though, in early July. The 3rd. Captain was a good dog. The best dog. He was a pain in the butt, too, though. Cleaning up his poo. Feeding him. Letting him out at night. Mom and Dad wanted me to learn to be more responsible, and I get that. I got that, but it didn't make it any less annoying. He had to go outside every night at 3 in the morning, like clockwork. In the summer, it was easier, though, because it didn't matter if I was tired in the day. I had just fallen asleep after staying up late to watch a monster movie when Captain wandered into my bedroom and nudged me to tell me he had to go out. I got up and followed him to the back door, stubbing my toes half a dozen times as I went. The path he took rambled through the house. It wasn't a direct route. It went from my bedroom, down the hall, left into the living room, through that to the dining room, and then through the kitchen to the back door when he could just have gone down the hall into the kitchen and out. He liked the other route best, though. I think it was his way to patrol and show me that we were safe. At the back door, I patted him on the head, unlocked the sliding glass door, and let him out into the backyard. The yard was fenced with 3 big trees standing guard at the back edge of the property, and a small shed Dad had built standing in the opposite corner. I turned the backyard light on, and then went back inside and sat down at the kitchen table and dropped my head into my hands. Captain wasn't always one to stay outside to play, but at night he was all in, racing around the yard, rolling around in the wet grass, and generally being a giant goof. As soon as my head hit my hands, I fell into darkness and was gone. I woke sometime later and groggily realized that the sun was starting to rise and I was still at the table. The back door was still open, and Captain, I quickly saw, was still outside. I got up and slowly trudged to the door to call him. He was sitting at the base of the middle tree in the backyard, looking up and panting as if he was excited. I called him again. He ignored me. He must have had something treed. That was what I figured, a raccoon or a possum. I called a third time, and he turned, gave me a goofy grin, and got up and ran to me and kissed my hand as he came inside, and we went right for his bed. He was asleep in a flash. Lucky guy. Dad caught me as I was making my way back to bed, and he clapped me on the shoulder and said the one word every kid hates more than any other in the summer. Lawn. I nodded and went into my room to get dressed and ready to mow the lawn. Now, did the lawn need to be mowed at 8 a.m.? No. But that's how Dad liked things, early. I'd cut the grass, he'd trim the bushes and edging. Mom would ramble out later with the baby to work in a small flower garden we had in the front of the house. We didn't have a big lawn, but with an old-fashioned push mower with no motor, it tended to take a while. Oh, and I didn't mention Dad didn't believe in music during the yard work. Yeah, there was that. He felt it was a distraction. From what, he wouldn't say. So I went out, opened the shed, pulled out the mower, and got to mowing. Dad would holler out to me from time to time to make sure I didn't have headphones on. It was a dick move, but that was Dad. He wasn't mean, but he was strict, and he liked his rules. When he called out to me, he never really had anything to say, just would yell, "How's it going out there?" or something else. It was dumb. But it was what it was. Still in all, though, the mind drifts as you do something repetitively. It just does. I didn't notice anything in the grass when I ran it over. Dad had called out to me, then hurried out to see why I had stopped. Maybe he was worried about me. I would like to think he was, but odds were that he was worried about the mower. I pulled the mower backwards and saw a dark red ball. Weird. I bent down to grab it, and as soon as my hand touched it, I felt how wet it was. I looked at my hand and saw it was red. Crap. I had run over an animal. My stomach dropped. Dad came up to me and saw my hand and grabbed it to see where I had cut myself. I told him I hadn't, that the red had come from the ball. He looked down at it, then dropped to his knees. He grabbed it, grimacing as he did, and dropped it again. "Did you hit something?" I shook my head. He looked back down and picked it up again, and then tilted his head as he looked at the mower. He grabbed hold of something beneath the mower, which was off now, and pulled, and out came a long piece of something that was also red and also attached to the ball. He pulled until all of it was out, and then looked at the ball. I knelt and looked at the ball, and it was gross and creepy, but it wasn't something dead. It was just fabric. Fabric someone had rolled up and dipped in paint or something. Dad dropped it back onto the ground and wiped his hands on the grass. "Get some gloves on and throw this thing in the trash, will ya? Then just finish things up and we'll call it a day for the yard work. We can finish it tomorrow." I nodded and watched him walk back towards the house, his eyes on his hands. He looked over his shoulder once, back towards the ball, and then went inside. For my part, I did as he asked and got some gloves, got the trash can, and we put outside trash in, and I threw the ball away. After that, I finished mowing and put the mower away and went inside to clean up. We ended up going to the beach that day and left Captain inside the house with the air conditioning. Dad was strange all day, though. Distant. Distracted. I caught him looking at his hands and rubbing them on a towel one time, as if something was on him. A chill ran down me, and I thought of that ball of material we found there, and the rest of the day wasn't as fun anymore. That night, we had burgers on the grill, Mom played with the baby, and Dad seemed to have forgotten whatever was bothering him earlier and was laughing, and even I got out of my funk as I was playing with Captain. It was strange, though. Every time he got near the trees at the back of the yard, he'd whine a little, look up, and I'd have to call him to get him to look away and come back to where the stick was I was throwing. Strange. That night, I beat Captain to the punch, getting up in the middle of the night to pee and deciding to check on him when I was done. I saw him sitting alert by the back door and figured he had to go out, so I opened the door for him. He looked up at me for a moment, almost, I don't know, asking permission maybe, and I patted him on the head and he slowly made his way outside. I closed the door because it had gotten chilly out and figured he'd want to play a little, and I went and sat on the couch and promptly fell asleep. I woke to Captain's whining and got up groggily and went to the door. It was nearly dawn again, and when I let him in, he raced past me right to my room where he slid under the bed. I followed him and laughed as I saw him go under the bed, but when I got down to look, I saw he was shaking. He was scared. Maybe he wanted permission to go out hadn't wanted permission to go out at all. Maybe he wanted permission to stay in. I didn't get back to sleep, and when Mom and Dad called me down for breakfast, I didn't come. After a few minutes, Dad came up looking for me, concerned. He could tell by the look on my face that something was bothering me, and he sat down inside the bed and patted my leg. "What is it, buddy? And hey, what the heck is Captain doing under your bed?" I told him what had happened the night before, and then the other night, the one that led to us finding the ball of fabric. Dad was silent for a minute, then patted me on the head. "Let me take a look back there and see if anyone has been fooling around with anything, and I tell you what, for the next few nights, if the big guy wants to go out, then you wake me up, and I'll take him, okay?" I smiled and felt It felt like a weight had been lifted. I got up and followed Dad out to breakfast, and Catherine was hot on my heels, sidling up next to me as we made our way into the kitchen. Dad spent a good part of the afternoon out by the back of the yard, looking around the fence, then around the shed, and finally he got a ladder out and looked up in the trees. He was up in the one closest to the back of the yard and came down after a few minutes, something held in his left hand as he descended the ladder. He stuffed something into the pocket of his pants as he pulled the ladder down, eyes up on the tree the whole time. Afterwards, he wouldn't answer any questions when I asked him what he'd found, just saying that it was nothing and to make sure to wake him if the dog wanted to go out. Later that night, as I was heading to bed, I heard him speaking to Mom in a hushed tone and only caught the words, "another one," but didn't know what he meant. I popped my head into the baby's room to check on her, then headed to bed where Captain was already waiting for me, hiding under the bed, and we slept. I woke late and got up to pee and found Captain sitting at the door again, staring into the darkness. Dad had turned the backyard light on, so I stood beside Cap and patted him on the head as we both looked out. He started whining, and I strained to see something, but couldn't. I checked to make sure the door was locked, hurried off to pee again, and then went right back to bed and found Cap lying on my bed waiting for me. He hadn't done that since he was a puppy. Nightmares chased me through my dreams that night, and I woke tired and listless. Cap was the same way, and when I let him out to go to the bathroom, he wouldn't go near the back of the yard. I walked back there and he looked around at first found nothing until I came back up to the house. That was when I saw it, next to the patio and the back door, another red ball. I looked around for Mom or Dad, and not seeing them, I picked it up, finding that it was still damp, and unraveled it slowly, more cloth, though I wasn't sure what it was from. The ball wasn't large, but it seemed as if the layers of soaked red cloth would never end until I knew I had gotten to the center when I pricked my thumb on something. I dropped the cloth and the last bit unraveled, revealing several small red pieces of something that looked like toothpicks, but when I picked one up, it felt smooth and hard. I rubbed at it, and when I saw that it was yellowish beneath the red, I dropped it, thinking suddenly of the documentaries Mom and Dad made me watch about archaeology and bones. Things in the cloth looked like shell shards of bones, and if Cap had gotten it and bitten into it... I heard Dad and swept the mess up in my hands and got up and threw it into the trash. Later that afternoon, I caught Dad while Mom was out in the front yard with the baby and told him what I had found and showed it to him in the trash. He got quiet and rubbed his chin. "Someone's playing a cruel game with us, kiddo. A dangerous game." "What do you mean?" I asked. "Someone wants to hurt Cap. I found the same sort of things in other balls I found. I saved one of those balls. I'm going to call the police and speak to them. Until they can get out here, you keep Cap on a leash and you don't let him out of your sight. And you stay close to the house and away from the back there. Got me?" He was serious, so I nodded and headed back into the house. Cap was under my bed and I got under there with him and we lay like that for a while. Until Mom came looking for me. "Honey, get dressed. Your dad's had an accident." "Dad had been up in the trees again looking for something," he told my mom. She had been back there with him. Holding the ladder, but thought she heard me calling for her, so she left him to check as soon as she got into the house, she heard my dad cry out, and when she turned, he was in a heap at the bottom of the ladder, his arm twisted at a wrong angle, and several deep scratches along his face. He was dazed, but Mom got him up and into the car, and that was when she came for me and Amelia. She called our next-door neighbor, an elderly woman, and told her what had happened, and she promised to look in on Cap to see how he was doing in case we were gone for a while. We were gone for 7 hours. There had been a boating accident nearby, and the hospital was a mess. Dad's arm was busted in two places, and he had a concussion, but the doctor said he was lucky it wasn't worse. When asked about the scratches, he said Dad wasn't sure how it had happened. The doctor told us that it must have been there from the tree, though he didn't seem sure about this. When they wheeled Dad back, he looked drugged, but as soon as Mom and the baby left the area, he was in the ER to speak to a... left the area, he was wheeled back into the ER with a nurse while they got him ready to be released. Sorry. While Mom was away, he leaned in close to me and whispered, "I caught it up there. I caught it. Christ, Jesus Christ, son. It's Captain. Where's Captain?" My mom returned and Dad let go of me and it was out in an instant, stoned on pain medication that was dripping into him drop by drop. Dad was hurting, it was clear, but it was Cap I was thinking of, my big, sweet boy. It was after 10 at night when Mom called the neighbor woman. The old lady had been asleep and the phone woke her, but yeah, she said, old Cap is fine, just fine. It had been such a nice day that she thought he'd like spending some time outside, so she let him out at 5 and he was still out there. She'd forgotten all about him, but hadn't even heard him barking. Mom asked her to go check on him, and the woman insisted he was fine, just fine. She had even hooked him to the cable we had out there for him when he'd been a puppy. The woman, sweet as she usually was, had no interest in going out at this hour, but Mom insisted. So the lady walked over to the house, muttering to Mom the entire time about how she shouldn't have to do this, and she looked through the fence and said Cap was lying by the ladder, back by the trees in the back of the house. And then she went quiet. Mom asked her what was going on. And the woman told her that there was a large puddle underneath Captain, as if he was lying in a puddle. Mom got quiet herself and told the woman goodbye and hung up. I saw from the look on her face what I'd been horrified about all these days. I knew my dog was dead. Mom called the police, and they met us at the house when we returned with Dad. The police pulled Mom aside when we got there, and I saw her start crying. There were two police cars, and the officer from the second car was next door speaking to the woman. Neighbors were at their doors, in their yards, at the road, speaking to one another, asking what was going on. Dad was still evidently sedated and in the passenger seat while I had been in the back with Amelia. Mom had told me to stay put, but as soon as everyone's attention was away from me, I slipped out of the car and towards the back of the house. I went through the old lady's yard to the back and dropped to my knees and looked through the gaps in the fence. Cap was there, lying motionless, sprawled out in long cold. His head was mostly gone, but there was no blood, not even beneath him, like the woman had said. It was just him. I reached the gap and grabbed his paw and rubbed it and held it and cried softly until my mom and an officer ushered me away. We slept at the house with an officer parked out in front and a detective and a directive not to go outside. The next day, more police arrived to check the scene, as they called it, and Cap, who they had left back there until someone could come to collect him. Dad was more himself, and I heard he and Mom crying when she told him what had happened. I slept under my bed with the blanket he liked to carry around. All I could think about were those balls that someone was leaving for him. But whatever had happened to him, it was more than him chewing on one of those. Much more. In the middle of the day, the police were done, and they sat us all down to speak to us. Interview us, they said. We told them everything we knew, and they nodded and took notes. They pulled out a bag with one of the balls in it and showed us, and we nodded that yes, that was what had been left out there. More notes. The officer told us that they believed that someone had slipped Cap a firecracker, and that was how he had died. It had exploded in his mouth. M80 was what they said it probably was. I didn't ask why there wasn't any blood. I didn't have anything to say at all, to be honest. I just wanted to go back under my bed. The officer told us that they believed it had been some local kids, but they wanted to keep an eye out and to be careful, and that they'd have an officer checking in with us to make sure everything was okay. Dad asked if they had checked the trees. They had checked up in the trees. And the officer seemed confused by the question and told him that no, they hadn't, and asked if he thought there might be something up there. Dad nodded, and the officer called to his partner, and they grabbed the ladder and went up to look. Dad had been right. They found several more of those balls inside a big hole high up in the tree at the furthest back part of the yard. Dad nodded. Sir, I know this may seem extreme, but we might recommend already ahead of you, officer. I have the tree removal coming tomorrow. I just wish they'd make it here sooner. As the police left, we all looked down at the backyard, and Dad closed the blinds to block it out. We'd had enough of back there. The police had Cap cremated for us in case there was anything else done to him. They didn't find anything on their check of him, but we live in a smallish city, and this was a horrible crime, so more than anything, I think this was just a small-town kindness, and we appreciated it. I slept with Cap every night for a month. I only let him go when we were about to go into the new school year, and Dad asked me if I was ready to let him rest. I was. I didn't want to be, but I was. Dad, Mom, baby Amelia, and I went out into the front yard and grabbed some flowers, then into the backyard to the bushes he loved to hide beneath, and we all said a few words. As we were talking, I noticed Amelia looking back to where the trees had been. She giggled then and toddled over to the bushes that were back there. With the trees gone, we weren't as nervous about the backyard, but I watched her the entire way. We all said our piece, and I put the box with cap into a hole behind the bushes. It was a box Mom had paid in, which we had all put notes in for cap. I covered the box with dirt and knelt there, crying as Dad and Mom patted my shoulders. Dad called to Amelia, but I stood up and told him I'd get her. I walked back towards her and was confused. She was laughing and wiggling and acting as if she was playing with someone. I came up behind her, and she never knew I was there. I scooped her up in my arms, and she squealed as I kissed her on the back of her neck. I dropped her back down, and she giggled and poked me in the leg and then ran off to Mom and Dad. I looked at the three tree stumps and left until someone could come dig them out, and then the bushes behind them. A long row that ran to both sides of the fence along to where we had buried Cap. I scanned it, looking to see if there was a rabbit or some other animal she was playing with, but saw nothing. I was trying to leave when I noticed something sticking out of the bottom of a bush at the point where the two sides of the fence met. I walked over to it and knelt and saw a red mass there. I reached forward towards it and stopped short. It was just like one of the balls. I poked it and rolled it over, and it was roughly shaped like a person with a long piece of cloth that led back into the bushes. I was confused. Cap was dead, so what was... Then I thought of Amelia back here laughing and dancing. A doll. This was supposed to be a doll. My stomach dropped. I reached for it to grab it to show Dad, a long, thin stick emerged from the bushes and went towards the doll. As the stick stretched out 1 foot, 2 foot, and more, I saw an elbow and saw fingers erupt from a bald fist. An arm. It was an arm. Thin, white, and looking like it was more stick than flesh. It reached and grabbed the doll and pulled it slowly back into the bushes, and I threw myself backwards on my butt. I stared at the bushes in utter shock, uncertain what to do. From those bushes came a long growl that I realized was someone shushing me. From the bushes, the arm reemerged. A long, pale finger wagged at me to say, "No, no, no." I was up and running toward the house in a flash, and a growl chased me as I went. Whatever the thing in the bushes was had taken my dog, and now it wanted Amelia. I ran to the kitchen and reached into one of the higher cupboards where I wasn't supposed to be, and grabbed some lighter fluid and matches. It already had taken my dog. It would never take my sister. Never.
Hello there, listeners. So for the next thing I'm going to read something that isn't mine. Kind of like doing a cover song, I'm going to be doing a cover story, if you will. So this story should have a small introduction, and that's what I'm going to do now. The story is written by one of the most famous horror writers, probably ever. It's a very, very famous piece of horror flash fiction. In my opinion, one of the most important pieces of flash fiction, and in many other horror fans, it's a very famous piece of flash fiction as well. So, without any further ado, let us read Richard Matheson's Born of Man and Woman. This day, when it had light, Mother called me wretch. "You wretch," she said. I saw her in her eyes the anger. I wonder what it is, a wretch. This day it had water falling from upstairs. It fell all around. I saw that. The ground of the back I watched from the little window. The ground, it sucked up the water like thirsty lips. It drank too much, and it got sick and runny brown. I didn't like it. Mother's pretty, I know. In my bed place, with cold walls around, I have a paper things that was behind the furnace. It says on its screen stars, I see in the pictures faces like of mother and father. Father says they are pretty. Once he said it. And also mother he said. Mother's so pretty, and me, decent enough. Look at you, he said. And didn't have the nice face. I touched his arm and said, it is all right, father. He shook and pulled away where I couldn't reach. Today, mother let me off the chain a little so I could look out the little window. That's how I saw the water falling from upstairs. This day, it had goldenness in the upstairs, as I know when I looked, it hurt my eyes. After I look at it, the cellar is red. I think this was church. They leave the upstairs. The big machine swallows them and rolls out past and is gone. In the back part is the little mother. She is much smaller than me. I can see out the little window all I like. In this day, when it got dark, I had eaten my food and some bugs. I hear laughs upstairs. I like to know why there are laughs for. I took the chain from the wall and wrapped it around me. I walked squished to the stairs. They creak when I walk on them. My legs slip on them because I don't walk on stairs. I hear the laughing some more. I walk to the sound and look through to the people. More people than I thought was. I thought I should laugh with them. Mother came out and pushed the door in. It hit me and hurt. I fell back on the smooth floor and the chain made noise. I cried. She made a hissing noise into her and put her hand on her mouth. Her eyes got big. She looked at me. I heard Father call. What fell? He called. She said, a iron board. Come help pick it up, she said. He came and said, now is that so heavy you need? He saw me and grew big. The anger came in his eyes. He hit me. I spilled some of the drip on the floor from one arm. It was not nice. It made ugly green on the floor. Father told me to go to the cellar. I had to go. The light, it hurt some now in my eyes. It is not so like that in the cellar. Father tied my legs and arms up. He put me on my bed. Upstairs I heard laughing while I was quiet there, looking on a black spider that was swinging down to me. I thought what Father said. Oh God, he said, and only eight. This day, Father hit in the chain again before it had light. I have to try pull it out again. He said I was bad to come upstairs. He said never do that again or he would beat me hard. That hurts. I hurt. I slept a day and rested my head against the cold wall. I thought of the white place upstairs. I got the chain from the wall out. Mother was upstairs. I heard little laughs very high. I looked out the window. I saw all little people, like the little mother and little fathers too. They are pretty. They were making nice noise and jumping around the ground. Their legs was moving hard. They are like mother and father, Mother says, "All right, people look like they do." One of the little fathers saw me. He pointed at the window. I let go and slid down the wall in the dark. I curled up as they would not see. I heard their talks by the window and foots running. Upstairs there was a door hitting. I heard the little mother call upstairs. I heard heavy steps and I rushed in my bed place. I hid the chain in the wall and lay down on my front. I heard my mother come down. "Have you been at the window?" she said. I heard the anger. "Stay away from the window. You have pulled the chain out again." She took the stick and hit me with it. I didn't cry. I can't do that. But the drip ran all over the bed. She saw it and twisted away and made a noise. "Oh my God, my God," she said. "Why have you done this to me?" I heard the stick go bounce on the stone floor. She ran upstairs. I slept the day. This day, it had water again. When Mother was upstairs, I heard the little one come slow down the steps. I hid myself in the coal bin, for Mother would have anger if the little mother saw me. She had a little live thing with her. It walked on the arms and had pointy ears. She said things to it. It was all right, except the live thing smelled me, ran up the coal, and looked down at me. The hairs stood up. In the throat, it made an angry noise. I hissed, but it jumped on me. I didn't want to hurt it. I got fear because it bit me harder than the rat does. I hurt, and the little mother screamed. I grabbed the live thing tight. It made sounds I never heard. I pushed it all together. It was all lumpy and red on the black coal. I hid there when Mother called. I was afraid of the stick. She left. I crept over the coal with the thing. I hid it under my pillow and rested on it. I put the chain in the wall again. This is another times. Father chained me tight. I hurt because he beat me. This time I hit the stick out of his hands and made noise. He went away and his face was white. He ran out of my bed place and locked the door. I am not so glad. All day it is cold in here. The chain comes slow out of the wall. All I have a bad anger with Mother and Father. I will show them. I will do what I did that once. I will screech and laugh loud. I will run on the walls. Last, I will hang head down by all my legs and laugh and drip green all over until they are sorry they didn't be nice to me. If they try to beat me again, I'll hurt them. I will.
We Spent a Night in the Church by Paul Kanellis. Probably the stupidest idea about our night in the big church near the expressway was deciding to be dropped off. Sure, it was daring because if, well, whatever happened, we would obviously have to stay put and deal with it. Sure, we could have tried to walk, but it wasn't really an option. We lived in different places, too far away. So when Matt, David, Zach, Christian, Jason, and I watched the car pull away, we pretty much knew we were in it for the long haul. And I mean, yeah, we could have called for a ride. We instructed our wives and better halves not to pick us up, no matter how much we begged. Whatever. We decided to do this thing, and the initial idea was to go to the seemingly haunted church and get some proof. Proof, man. What all paranormal researchers want. If we got it, why the hell would we want to run? No. We needed to stay and record whatever we saw, heard, even felt. We rented the church for the night, so we arrived with our equipment. Cameras, phones, EVP recorders, motion sensor, even a spirit box, and our sleeping bags, like we were going to sleep. We mapped out a plan, the buddy system. Zach and Dave would take the big chapel upstairs. From visiting the church many times before, several of us had sensed a strange feeling in the hall. We had tried offhanded EVP sessions, attempting to pick up otherworldly sounds, but had never really gotten anything concrete. Matt and Jason would take the downstairs rooms. The basement had two big halls where receptions, meetings, and parties took place. The other rooms were like small classrooms. There was one particularly sinister room on the right. Just walking past it gave me the creeps. Christian and I would stay in what everyone considered the hotbed of activity in this particular building, a small chapel in the center of the church. To say we were at least somewhat wary was an understatement. We had gotten something very close to proof in that room before, in the form of orbs. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Orbs, right? And you have a point. Orbs are usually fairly easily disproven, or so I've heard. Camera tricks, the way a lens catches the light, dust, bugs. But here's the clincher for the photos that we got. Orbs in the same place, 3 years apart. That felt pretty compelling, if not solid evidence. It needed to be followed up. We would go to our respective rooms, set up the equipment, and see what we could get. We would meet in the big hall downstairs and compare the results. Maybe we would be down there just saying, nope, nothing, didn't pick up anything. But maybe, well, you never know, right? That's what makes it exciting. Do I believe in ghosts? I don't know. Do you? I refuse to be pressured into not believing in anything that might be unexplainable just because some people think it's silly. For one thing, it's really hard to measure paranormal activity with scientific means because paranormal means not normal. So if something happens one time to disrupt the measurements of 1,000 attempts, it's just considered an anomaly, right? Anyway, at 9:14 p.m. we split up, went to the assigned places, and began our search. Christian and I set up our camera in that little chapel. We placed a motion sensor on one side of a pew just past the closed door. I held the digital voice recorder in my right hand and my phone camera in the other. We tried the usual, is anyone here? Show yourself. Say something. Nothing happened. We took photos, video, and ran the voice recorder for close to an hour, asking questions the entire time. We decided to sit down in a pew across from the door and spread out our sleeping bags. I hadn't really stopped feeling terrified since we got into the room, so sleep would not be happening anytime soon. This really became apparent with what happened next. Christian stared off across the pew and didn't stir at all. What? What is it? I asked. He pulled on my sleeve and pointed toward the door. See him? Right there? By that pew? My flesh became pimply, and I could feel my eyes starting to water. No. No. What are you seeing? It's an old man. He's looking at us. He's saying no and shaking his head. He looks angry. I lifted my camera and took a bunch of pictures. I held out the voice recorder. Who are you? Why are you saying no? Paul, we should go. He's walking towards us. I stood my ground for a few more seconds. I continued to shoot video. No. He can leave. Christian's eyes opened wide as he stared off. Hey, he's right in front of you. I felt him. His breath. It smelled like a cigar. I froze in fear. Say something. Tell us your name. Christian leaned in toward me and whispered, it's not what you think. I took a few steps backward and looked around the room. The cameras were rolling. I had taken pictures and recorded with the voice recorder. If there was evidence to be gotten, surely we had gotten it. He's gone, Christian whispered. just like that. I breathed a sigh of relief. I couldn't wait to get to the others to compare what we got. I called Dave. Me and Zachy didn't get anything, Dave said. That I know of. But I guess Matt and Jason got an interesting photo. Oh, really? Dave laughed. Yeah. Why are you guys fucking around? I thought we were going to take this seriously. I hesitated, confused. Wait, what? Christian gave me a puzzled look. What does he mean by that? I shrugged. At that moment, the doorknob turned slowly. When the door opened, I was stunned. Christian walked in. Hey, I thought we were going to do this room together, he said. I felt like I was floating as I looked around the room. The Christian that I had been gathering evidence with was gone. What? Christian laughed. You were with me. No, I was pranking Jason and Matt. They were taking pictures and I mooned them through the outside window. The room felt like it was spinning. I sat down. Hey, do you smell that? Christian asked. It smells like a really strong cigar. You okay? Christian said as he sat next to me. Well, what did you get? Anything interesting? I opened my camera and pushed play on the most recent video. We watched silently for a minute or so, then he spoke up. Who the heck were you talking to? Christian, I said as calmly and with as much stillness as I could manage. Could you please get the cameras down and meet me at home? What the heck? He trailed off. I walked out of the building, out into the parking lot, and I calmly, evenly walked the 6 miles back to my house.